Death Eaters, welcome back to Meditating on Death. We're your hosts, Hua
and Les.
And on today's episode, we will be talking about our immigrant experience and the American dream.
Mm-hmm. Let's get into it.
So we're going to start off with our usual catch up.
Checking in.
Yes. So I guess like starting with me, I have a rec for you guys today.
Let's hear it.
Wasabi and cheese.
And how did you come across this?
I tried it last night and it was like so amazing. And so I would recommend everyone trying
what wasabi kind of cheese?
Gruyere?
Yeah, I never know how to say that cheese name. Yeah, Gruyere.
Yeah. Gruyere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what made you think about this odd combination?
I was looking for a snack in the fridge and I came across cheese and wasabi, and it turned out to be a wonderful combination.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that is my rec for today.
I was not expecting that when you were like, I finally have a rec this week. Hey, but you know what? I'm here for it. I love being taken by surprise, you know?
But onto like, your rec.
Okay, how should I follow after that one? Cheese and wasabi? Jesus Christ.
It's amazing. I know.
I have two recs this week. So following our last week's check-in topic about Maui, I hope you guys were able to support Maui in your own way. So my family and I actually plan to go to Maui next month, and we've been planning this since like a year ago. And we were thinking about canceling the trip because we didn't want to be insensitive and disrespectful to the locals and the natives there. But actually, the Airbnb host and the car company, who are both locals there, they called me and they said, hey, please don't cancel your trips. There's actually a rumor going around that Hawaii doesn't want tourists to come, but we're actually struggling because a lot of our money comes from the tourism economy. Mm-hmm. So you would actually be helping us a lot if you actually didn't cancel your trip and you came as planned.
That's interesting because there are a lot of news saying like, oh, don't come right now because they're rebuilding.
Right.
And so is it like the same part that you'll be at?
Yeah. So they said just don't go into the Lahaina area, but they urged us to not cancel our trip because it is a rumor. And I like that I got that information from locals as opposed to like, you know, social media or the news where it's a little bit more like twisted.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And a little bit biased.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. And that's good to know.
Yeah.
Because I don't think people are really talking about that. Because I have a few friends who are canceling their Maui trip because of what's going on right
yeah.
now, you know?
I mean, there is a rumor going around, so that makes sense.
Yeah, okay.
My other recommendation is that last week I went lindy hopping, which is a form of swing dance, and we came across a band. It's a string quartet called Le Jazz Hot.
Le Jazz?
Le Jazz Hot, yes. There is a bass, cello on bass, violin. There is a classic guitarist and then a rhythm guitarist. Mm. They're coming out with a new EP, and I always love to like boost bands that aren't as well known, I suppose. And it just took me back to like the swing times, and I really enjoy their music.
Whenever you do that shoulder hop.
Yeah, so check them out, folks. Le Jazz Hot.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So Maui, Le Jazz Hop.
Hot.
Hot.
Yeah.
Le Jazz Hot. Mm-hmm. Hot like hot chili peppers.
Yes. Or like a hot like the weather. Yes.
Like the weather. Mm-hmm. And wasabi and cheese.
I would say that's the greatest recommendation.
They're all great recommendations. We'll jump into our topic today. Mm-hmm. It is a heavier topic this time because it's very personal to the both of us. Mm-hmm. But we do hope that while you guys are listening, that you can somewhat relate, or maybe it'll open up a perspective if you can't relate.
Mm-hmm. I think this will be very meaningful for us personally.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it in a different way. Not with like excitement, but more so because it's going to bring us clarity, you know, and also like a caress in mm-hmm. our soul type of way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of unpacking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I'm so excited to be doing this with you.
Me too. I'm ready.
Yeah. I think also setting the tone. I think I was getting very sentimental mm-hmm. this week thinking about this topic. Because
same.
I think you and I talk about it very briefly.
Mm-hmm.
And a very surface level, because during our catch-up, there's only so much you can talk about.
Yeah.
And so we always move from past and we talk about what's current and like what we aspire
yeah.
For our life. But to be able to sit down and actually dive deeper into this topic with you mm-hmm. is important to me, because I sort of get to know you a little bit.
Oh my God, I'm going to cry already.
You know? Because we don't really get deeper into these things. And hopefully you guys get to know us a little bit more too, because mm-hmm. it's a very complex topic
yeah.
that we are trying to navigate. Yeah.
And one of our intentions for today's podcast episode is to let ourselves be vulnerable. And I think this yeah. is a great practice and exercise for us to do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if we're crying, bear with us.
Cry with us.
Cry with us.
Bitches love ugly crying anyway.
Yeah.
All right, shall okay. we?
Yes. So starting off, we do want to pay tribute to our parents, because ultimately we are immigrants mm-hmm. and we do we experience this idea of the American dream because of them.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in a way, this episode is sort of dedicated to them and to us.
Oh, I love that. Know? Yeah.
Yeah.
When you read a book, it's like the first page is like dedicated to. So mm-hmm. I like how you did that for our podcast.
Yeah.
Paying homage and tribute.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And for our this or that, I only have one. This is actually pretty hard to come up with. So shoes or no shoes in the house?
Oh my God. It's different, because like when I was going to school, I was so embarrassed. Like whenever I would go to like my friend's house, they're like, oh no, you don't have to take off your shoes. What are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like also culture shocked. I'm like, you go into your room with your shoes?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, what about all the dirt and grime and, mm-hmm. and dust and stuff? And then, like, people rarely came over to my house, because we lived in a pretty small apartment for a family of four. But then, like, I would always feel embarrassed about, like, asking my friends to take off their shoes. Just because it's, like, different cultural norms and conditions. But now, I can't go back.
Yeah.
No shoes in the house whatsoever.
Okay. So was there a period of time where you did wear shoes in the house? Was it during college?
It was. Yeah. During college.
Okay.
And when I was living with roommates, and they mm-hmm. were predominantly, I suppose, a little bit westernized. Mm-hmm. You know, I usually just like, and also I was moving into the house with already kind of like set
okay,
rules. So I didn't really want to go in and be like, we got to do things my way, you know?
Yeah.
I can live in a house with shoes, but I would prefer, if I had a choice, I would absolutely say no shoes in the house
yeah.
whatsoever.
Yeah, there's actually an experiment where they sort of take the dirt under your shoes
mm-hmm.
and then also the dirt in front of like where your front door is
mm-hmm.
and they compare how fast that bacteria sort of spreads and grows. It's actually really nasty.
Yeah. I think ignorance yeah. is bliss when it comes to that one.
Yeah.
I don't want to know about it.
When I was like younger, we watched TV shows, people would be wearing their shoes into bed.
Yeah.
And then like knowing what my mom would tell me, I'm just like, how's that possible? Like, you try to put two and two together.
It just didn't make sense.
It just didn't make any sense.
No.
And luckily, I was surrounded by people who always took their shoes off.
Mm-hmm.
So it was never really a struggle.
Yeah.
I don't think I would ever convert to shoes in the house.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. I'm also a germaphobe. So <it's> like-
Another thing is, like, I don't sit on my bed with my outside clothes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's only, like, pajamas only, or, like, indoor clothes only, because
yeah.
like you're also carrying germs for, I don't know, I'm just
yeah.
I'm just like that. Also, I love to shower before bed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am the same way. So we're gonna now move into our topic. I guess the first question is, when did you come to America, and can you recollect the experience of entering the United States?
Yes, so I came to America from South Korea when I was about 10, 11 years old. We were first in the cuts of Oakland. My recollection of immigrating to the United States was surreal. it didn't seem like this was my reality just because there was such a contrary, dichotomous. It almost didn't seem like my world emerged. It just didn't make sense to me that I was in Korea with people that looked like me,
mm-hmm.
right? And I could speak the language. And then once I entered the United States, I was like, is this a dream?
Yeah.
Like, am I living my own life right now? Like, pinching myself? Like, mm-hmm. what? Yeah.
So How old were you when you...
I was like 10, 11 10 years
11.
Old.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Closer to 11
okay.
than 10.
Yeah, that's around when my brother entered mm-hmm. America. It was like a huge shock.
Yeah, huge shock. Mm-hmm. What about you?
I came over when I was three.
Three?
So I have no recollection mm. of actually entering the United States.
Okay.
So usually around three or four, I think kids don't really have like core memories then. Mm-hmm. Like you're still just like moving. You're still learning a lot of things. Yeah. So I don't really know what my environment is. I don't really know like... the difference of like being on a plane and yeah. like going somewhere else, you know, because mm. even then I didn't have any attachment to Vietnam.
Yeah. So. One thing that I remember is at the airport when they were sending us off, like my family in Korea, I remember witnessing my mother sobbing and I remember the pain that she felt. That's something I remember distinctly and yeah. vividly. To this day. And I remember crying as well, but I didn't know what I was crying for because it was just unreal to me. But maybe I was also feeling my mother's pain.
Yeah. Do you know why she was crying? Leaving the country or like...
Yeah, I'm not too sure. I mean, at the time, we had planned to come back after spending a year because the purpose of us moving here was so that first for Greg and I's education and for us to... gain the access to English, which is very highly esteemed in Korea. Like if you speak English, then like, oh my God, they put you on a pedestal, right? Yeah. So that was the primary intention for coming here.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like, because my parents left Vietnam because the conditions in Vietnam was really bad.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like anything like that for you guys. It was just purely for the education and the purpose of learning English.
That's what they tell me.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I remember having a pretty good childhood in Korea, you know?
Okay.
But I mean, I'm a child, right? I'm having a good day if I go out and play ball.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
If I'm playing like hopscotch or whatever, or jump rope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the reason why I ask about your age is because we came at very different stages of our life.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Excuse me. And we would be considered as first generation immigrants, right? But we're actually not, according to new sociology terms, right? You would be considered as 1.25 or 1.5, I believe. Yeah, you would be considered as 1.5 and I would be considered as 1.75.
Okay.
So our parents is considered as the first generation immigrant.
Okay.
So the reason why... that is because they're coming in with basically they're full grown adults. And so they have to go through greater assimilation or acculturation, right? Whichever it is in order to make it in this country with zero to little English, but you're coming in your teens. So you have the opportunity to mold into this culture. And also you have basically a half and half thing, right? You already know Korean. You have the Korean culture and you're very aware as a child.
Yeah.
But now what's happening is growing from teen to adulthood, you are taking on American culture. And so you sort of have to balance between the dynamics of your Korean culture and the dynamics of your American culture.
Okay, I always thought I was first generation, but good to know. I am 1.5.
Yeah, I didn't know about this until one of my friends, she was a sociology major, and she actually brought it up to me. And I was just like, oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I didn't
like,
know
I thought it was either first generation or second generation.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm 1.75 because I wasn't born here, so I'm not a second generation.
Right.
My sister would be a second generation.
Right.
But because I was so young, it's way easier for me to grow up in the American society.
Right.
Because now I am more, I'm going to American schools, right? Where I'm not speaking Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. I'm taking on a lot of the American culture versus my own culture, yeah. even though it's still there. And they say that the 1.75 and second generation are more likely to actually lose a part of their culture because of their acculturation into the new society sure. that they're in.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. So that is something that to keep in mind mm-hmm. because I think when we're talking about like our immigrant journey, there will be some differences, okay. even though we think that we originally thought it was we were in the first generation. We're yeah. sort of like experiencing the same thing. But because you came into the society later in your development years, mm-hmm. right? The struggles are somewhat very different.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm interested to dig deeper. Let's get into it.
Yeah. So we're going to like wind back and like sort of talk about the American dream. So the concept of the American dream sort of allowed immigrants, anyone coming from a different country into the United States to sort of hold out the hope for a better life. This sort of entailed a life of equal opportunities where work is sort of valued over class or being well-born. Mm. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think this is something that was very popularized, especially in the 1980s and 90s, mm-hmm. right? When the borders were sort of open and there was a huge influx of immigration yeah. into America. So I guess like the question is, what was your parents' American dream? And basically, what were their goals and aspirations coming over to America? And I guess you sort of talked about this a little bit.
Again?
Well, one of it was moving over to America was
oh, yeah.
education.
Yeah. And this, I think a lot of people will relate. A lot of immigrant parents sacrifice their own well-being mm-hmm. and identity. They give it up for their offspring, I suppose. Yeah. So, yeah, one of the goals that I know of, or one of the reasons why we came here, was so that my brother and I could get better education. So after a year about staying here, I guess my mom saw that the education system in America were better for us. Mm. So we extended it one more year. And then after one more year, I guess they ultimately came to a decision like, yeah, I think it's better for, you know, Leslie and Greg to stay here.
Wow.
So that's one. So it was for our education.
So there were many opportunities for you to go back to Korea. It wasn't like a permanent stay where it's like we just cut off everything and we just start a new life here.
Yeah, but there were some conflicts between that decision too, right?
Okay.
One of them wanted to stay. One of them were like, you know, we should go back. So there was a little bit of conflict between my parents as well, about making that decision.
Okay.
But ultimately, they stayed for us.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
My parents' American dream now, I would say, I think everyone kind of wants this, to own a home.
Yeah.
It's not, yes, the physical aspect of it, but also the concept of home.
Yeah.
And I think that stems from the fact that we don't have any family here. It's literally just me and my immediate family. And I'm sure my parents feel the same way. But we want to lay our roots down and yeah. make it feel like it is my home and not stuck between the two cultures.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say that's my American dream as well, right? Mm-hmm. To be able to purchase a home for, you know, financial reasons mm-hmm. as well. But there is accrued wealth, right? How do you... You know, some people are born into generational wealth or there is like nepotism, you know, and that shit is real. When yeah. you go to college, right? How are other people able to get internships? Well, because your parents know somebody who knows somebody. Mm-hmm. But it's like for us, like we literally had to start from the ground up without knowing anybody.
Anyone.
And it's about the equal opportunities that aren't presented and a little bit hidden beneath the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with the home ownership.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of immigrants coming over here, like, that is, like, the dream.
I know.
That is the goal. It's, like, the moment you get that, it's, like, you did it.
Yeah.
You made it. You have worked as hard as your parents wanted you to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they have the they have this concept, like, it's almost like a picturesque tableau.
It's, like, the picket fence kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's very similar. My parents want us to own a home, mm-hmm. but they ultimately came over here to build a better life because the conditions in Vietnam was just not habitable, mm-hmm. I guess. And also, like, the state that my parents were in was just not, because of the Vietnam War, they did have to move down south. My mm-hmm. dad's family was somewhat, like, rich. Mm-hmm. They own land, mm-hmm. right, if that's considered as rich. And so they lost all that in the Vietnam War.
Oh.
And so it's like rebuilding there, and it was just like you couldn't do anything that you wanted yeah. unless you knew someone.
Yeah.
Right?
Again.
And that's just what it was.
Yeah.
And even till today, when I talked to my sister-in-law's sister who just came over, she said she hopes that once her husband comes over here, he's going to be able to do whatever he wants to do.
Yeah.
Because even though he's hardworking over there, and this is still the culture over there.
Yeah.
Unless you know someone or unless you were well born, you won't be able to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So for instance, if your family was in construction, that's your destiny.
Yeah.
That wasn't something that you can't choose to do something else, mm-hmm. you know, unless you know someone.
So like the political and the social mm-hmm. limitations of yeah. the country.
Yeah, for yeah. sure. And I think this is something that's not really highlighted because I think there's been a lot of conflict recently, right? Mm-hmm. About like, oh, is America really that free? Mm-hmm. Is America really like full of opportunities mm-hmm. and such? But there is a reality check when you talk to people who are coming into here
yeah.
and all the hope that they have, right?
Yeah.
And you look at your opportunities and you think about like, oh shit, you know,
mm-hmm.
we did have good opportunity. No, mm-hmm. even if it was such a struggle.
Yeah. Quick tangent here.
Yeah.
That's why education is so important. And
yeah.
this is one of the reasons why I'm in education, because education was a ticket out for me.
Yes.
Right. It's a way to even the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
For sure.
And that's why we really have to invest in public education system
mm-hmm.
because it's people like us and other people that we can actually even out the playing field for them
yeah.
so that they have opportunities, right, for
yeah.
them to break out of that cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, and with that too, remember, the people who were oppressed are the people who couldn't read or write.
Yeah.
You know?
They want to keep us dumb.
So.
Knowledge is power, folks.
Yes, mm-hmm. for sure. And that's also one of my parents' goals too, education.
Yeah.
Right? We were not educated well over there, and my parents didn't have the opportunity to finish their education. And so coming over here, they just hoped that education was drilled into us.
Yeah.
You know?
That was like our core identity when we were going to school.
Yeah.
For sure.
Right? Like our parents was like, you have nothing but your education.
I know.
You know? Mm-hmm. Like you can't think about anything but your education.
Mm-hmm.
And so those were just like my parents' dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like you or your siblings needed to uphold that your parents' American dream? Were there any pressures?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think when I remember being a teenager and having education just be the utmost important aspect of my being and my presence and my mm-hmm. identity and my existence.
Yeah.
That I, you know, in your teenage years, everyone's like rebellious, right?
Yeah.
I was like, I remember having this thought one day. I was like, I'm just going to get all A pluses, but then I'm going to be depressed so that my parents back down on this like stupid education train.
And did that work?
No. I never got all A pluses. Your girl is not good at math, okay? I'm not good at math or science.
Yeah. Well, you're also the first child. First
born, my God, yeah. So,
so
much
like,
more pressure.
Oh, thank God I was the second born. Because, oh, bless my brother's heart. But
there is definitely a lot of pressure. And I took on a lot of the weight
mm-hmm.
That my parents were burdened with.
Yes.
And I actually took on a lot of roles because I spoke English and mm-hmm. my pronunciation was good. They asked me, or I mean, I didn't really have a choice back then. They made me translate for them a lot. So very early on, I took on a lot of adult responsibilities, even in middle school, such as handling police investigations, such as talking to a realtor or a lawyer, like things that are not even in a teenager's lived experience at that point in someone's life.
That's crazy, a police investigation?
Yeah, because we were working at a dry cleaners and this customer claimed that he paid for it when he clearly didn't.
Okay.
Yeah, and then they brought over the police and...
Oh, man.
Yeah.
How old are you?
Sorry, I was like, yeah, I was like seventh grade.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and I'm like... I'm scared shitless because, like, look at this huge man in a foreign country. Yeah. But because I was the only one that spoke English during that time, like, I had no choice but to be the sole communicator and, you know, a quasi-leader for the family.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's, firstborns, dude.
Mm-hmm.
I, like, saw how tough it was for my brother. He was the translator. He was everything. I called him the third parent, but I also called him evil dictator because when it wasn't my parents watching me, it was him. And he was so, like, he like stuck by the rules.
Yeah.
Like there was no leniency, you know, he was snitching on every single thing because he was like, I need to be here for mom and dad.
Yeah.
When
that's a coping mechanism.
I know. Mm-hmm. Right. But as a young child, you can't comprehend what they're doing for you,
right?
You know, like thinking about it now, it's just like he did what he could do to the best of his ability
at that time,
you know, at that time.
Yeah.
And so I think he felt the most pressure in upholding my parents' dreams because he was at your age where he saw them struggle, like from Vietnam over here to like even till now, he's like holding on to a lot of burden that. I think we are like really working through figuring out how to spread out the burden,
right?
You know,
yeah,
like because there's three of us, but he just feels so the sole provider. That's like,
I think that's very common,
you know,
as a child who's the firstborn in an immigrant family for sure.
Yeah,
yeah, and it took a lot of intentional time and effort and therapy for me to work through that as well. Shout out to my therapist, I love her so much.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because I know that's a lot of stress and a lot of like a lot of things you blame yourself for because you probably think, what can I do to be there for my parents?
Yeah.
But at the same time, how do I put myself first?
Yeah, because there is such a thing as like being the savior.
Yeah.
But that's not actually going to lead to productive results, right? It's just going to continue that vicious cycle over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to witness your parents go through the struggles that they go through. And you know, being a human and a child of people that you love, feel things that a child should not feel at that stage in their life. Now I've worked through it in hindsight, and also I'm doing like parts work with my therapist where I am addressing defragmented parts of myself currently, which has been so helpful for me and helps me kind of like work through my triggers that I currently have right now.
Okay.
But yeah, one of the things that was like the hardest for me was to witness my parents' pain and suffering. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that that's hard. I saw that as a young kid. And so I'm like, I think a part of me just like blocks it. Like sometimes I try to like pick at my memories as a child.
Yeah.
But it's so fragmented that I'm like, okay, what's hiding?
Yeah.
But also, I want to know.
Yeah. Like, that's what I'm doing right now in therapy.
Oh,
and it's so helpful.
Is it, though?
Like, it's so helpful.
I feel
helpful.
Like I would cry every session.
I'm like, I mean, I cry every session.
Okay.
No, but there are parts of us that we suppress out of survival mechanism that I was like, oh, my God, I didn't even know I had access to that part of myself.
Oh, man.
Like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And it's actually quite... revelatory, and it's actually so enlightening to know, this is what I've been suppressing this whole time. Yeah, now I have access to it, now I have control of it. I can access it when I want to, but I can also put it away and not live in fear of just suppressing it the entire time.
Okay,
I think everyone has to go to therapy. That's just my personal opinion, but anyway, on to our next topic.
Do you have an American dream of your own?
Do I have an American dream of my own?
From like when you were younger and I guess like now. Because you came over when you were 11, right? Yeah. Did you even understand what the American dream was?
I did, and okay. I still do, but I think American dream is a facade.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is but hollow.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is illusory, and I think it's a mirage.
What's illusory?
It's an illusion.
Oh. I heard... Okay, never mind. I thought it was loser.
It sounds like that.
Losers?
Illusory.
Illusory. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't really believe in it.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, go read Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men. I'm going to teach that to my ninth grader this year. But it's not real because there is such a thing as generational wealth. There is such a thing as nepotism. And education has somewhat evened the playing field for me. And I'm not saying hard work is futile.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely instilled the work ethic I have in me now, but I still think, like, looking at it, like, big picture, there are still systematic problems that we need to address as a country.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah. I don't really have one myself. I think have personal goals and aspirations, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's an American dream.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Got it. What about you?
I think I do. I think, well, it's more like my parents' dreams sort of imposed onto my dreams. Mm-hmm. I guess it's like also my hopes and dreams.
Yeah.
American dream, hopes and dreams sort of merged together kind of thing. I've always wanted a home. And so I think a part of me feels like I'm close.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the American dream, even though there are a lot of like social, societal and political things that attribute to it, because the American dream was a way to bring immigrants in.
Yeah.
And in a way, immigrants did get, what's that word?
False hope? I'm just kidding.
Yeah. it gives the false hope that you can make it in this world despite the other factors. Mm-hmm. You have to really look for it, right? For the opportunities. You have to put in a lot of work for it. But it allowed my family and me to sort of like work towards a goal. Right, that this could happen and this is possible for our lifetime.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
And I hope you get it.
I hope so, too.
Good vibes.
Good vibes. Yeah, so aside from our American dreams, we've been living here for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sort of had to navigate between, like, the culture that our parents have and also the culture that we experience, right now. In our environment.
Mm-hmm.
There are different ways that immigrants do go about to sort of adapting to the culture. Mm-hmm. And there's acculturation and assimilation.
Do you want to give a quick recap about what those are?
Yes. So acculturation is basically taking in small pieces of a culture, but not fully changing who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's the ability to balance what you know and your culture, and also to be able to take in your current environment's culture without forgetting your initial culture.
Sure.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And the assimilation is where you disregard your native culture entirely, and then you move into the new culture.
Yep. Thank you.
Yes. Do you feel like you have acculturated or assimilated into the American culture?
Currently,
yes.
Mm-hmm. I think I've acculturated.
Okay.
Yeah, because I definitely have spent more time in America than I have in Korea, but I would say it took a long time for me to get here, but I am equal parts Korean and American. Mm-hmm. Like, if you just meet me and you know me as, like, you know, an acquaintance or a friend, like, I seem very assimilated.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get to know me a little bit more, like, my friends realize, like, oh yeah, she's very, very in touch with her roots.
Yes, she is. Yes, you are.
I love watching Korean shows. I'm not saying that's what makes me Korean. Definitely try to keep up with the current events in Korea. I try to be aware of the cultural phenomenons or their way of thinking. Yeah. And I try to formulate my own opinion between the two worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot easier because you came when you were 11.
Mm-hmm.
Because my brother's the same way.
Yeah.
He's still very much in touch with all the Vietnamese news, mm-hmm. but he's also in touch with American. So he's like balancing between the two.
Yeah.
Right. So he's definitely like acculturated.
Mm-hmm.
A part of me, I feel like I think I was assimilating to American culture
mm-hmm.
at some point in my life. Like, I think I.
Me too.
Yeah. It was like really hard. Not, I guess, I don't know how to phrase this. I guess, I think I hated my culture.
Oh, same.
At one point.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just wanted to be American.
That's so natural.
I wanted to be white. I wanted to talk properly because I know that some parts of me still can't pronounce certain things mm-hmm. properly, right? And then it wasn't until after college or during college when I realized, like, there's no shame in being like my culture. And mm-hmm. it took a really long time. That was very recent, you know?
Yeah.
So I think like just balancing between the two. And I think I feel like different periods of my life, there was a lot of like
identity confusion.
Yes.
And turmoil.
Yes.
For sure.
You know?
For sure. I think for me, you are not alone in that.
Yeah.
So I very much relate to that. And you would find that there's actually a ton of research behind this.
Oh.
So my personal phases that I went through was first when I came, it was denial.
Mm.
Like I kept begging. I actually didn't speak to my parents for a while because I was so angry at them because mm-hmm. I didn't want to come to America. Like it yeah. wasn't in my control. I came here because they made me.
Mm-hmm.
So I hated my parents. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't speak to them. I was like, I hate you. I'm just going to be holed up in my room, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So first was denial. And then second, because I came here during the summer when school was during summer break. And then when I finally went to school, my school didn't have an ELD program. So they just like threw me under the bus and then they just put me in all regular classes. And I was nonverbal for about 3 to 4 months.
Wow.
I didn't speak a word. Because I didn't know how to say anything.
Yeah.
I didn't even know how to spell my own name, like Leslie.
Yeah.
And for the first 3-4 months, I didn't even know how to say, like, can I go to the restroom? So I would hold in my pee until 3 o'clock hit, and then I would zoom home like the Flash, and I would let out the Niagara Falls in my own bathroom. And I just remember that being... it just felt so surreal to me. Like, what is this alien foreign land that is now my reality? Like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
And then once I started picking up the language a little bit, I still was attached to Korean people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we moved from Oakland to Albany, El Cerrito area. And there were like maybe like 3-4 Koreans there. Whereas in Oakland, there were absolutely no Asians where I lived.
Mm-hmm.
So I only hung out with Koreans for like a year or two in my teenage years. And then when I went to high school, I remember having an identity crisis and it came out as, oh, I'm not Korean. I'm white.
Oh.
Like I literally told people that. But clearly looking at me, I'm clearly Asian, right?
Yeah.
But in a desperate attempt to want to appear white, I told people that I was right.
Yeah.
White, sorry, not
white. White.
Yeah. And that was a huge like turbulence for me at one point in my life. And that's because I was like so ashamed of my culture and I just wanted to fit in and be accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to belong somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to be white because through everything that the media was feeding me,
mm-hmm.
white is superior. You want to have blue eyes and blonde hair. You want to be, you know, as tall or have their build.
Mm-hmm.
To be white is power.
Yeah.
So I was telling people that I was white for for a period of time. And then I got over it. And then I went to college.
Mm-hmm.
And in college, I was in a sorority,
mm-hmm.
Which was Greek. And it was, you know, it was a sorority of all races. But I predominantly assimilated during that time, so I really didn't have like a lot of Asian friends like at all, even like in college and a little bit after post college. It's only now that I have a lot more Asian friends in my life. And also I live in the Bay Area, so yeah. I think location matters too.
Location matters a lot. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
But I'm a lot more in touch with my culture than I was back then.
Okay.
And you'd be surprised to know, when I was going to my teaching credential program, we read a couple of research works about the identity crisis that the immigrant children go through. And when I read that, I felt so seen because I was like, that was what I went through. Yeah. But they just put a technical term to it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can relate to that a lot.
Yeah.
So there's so much research behind this, but I'm going to mention a more recent one. And this is published in the Journal of Experiential Psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. And the identity formation for immigrant children that they go through is 1, emotional detachment from their parents and their family. And then they also mourn. They're mourning what their life used to be, you know? And I think I definitely went through that because I didn't talk to my parents. And I was like, why am I here? Why can't I just be in Korea with all my friends? 2 is assimilation. So wanting to fit in, especially as children and as teenagers, where they're in such vulnerable states. 3 is identity deconstruction, where you are just like, and I think that's very similar to me proclaiming like I'm not Korean, I'm white, you know?
Yeah.
And then the 4th and last stage is reconstructed, acculturated self. So these are, to put it, there's a lot more stages in between, but these are the 4 main stages that immigrant children go through.
Yeah.
And as hard as teaching ELD right now is for me, I'm glad that I'm the teacher for this because I know firsthand what it feels like to go through these identity crises, you know, aside from just like academics and learning English.
And that's why I think you're going to do amazing.
Oh my God.
You're going to impact them so much.
It's killing me right now, but I know that my efforts will come into fruition.
Yes. Yes. But that's crazy because I feel that probably not as much as you do because I didn't have to mourn my like leaving a country, but it's just like a matter of like fitting in.
Yeah.
You know, and seeing what you see. And if you, I was surrounded by, I went to Santa Clara and during that time there weren't Asians.
Oh.
It was all white, white or Hispanic, but like rarely any Asians, right? And during that time as well, my brother got bullied like crazy.
That's very common.
And so he got bullied to the point where like he just didn't want to talk anymore.
That was also the experience for me.
And so even till this day, he would say like he would have me revise his stuff, even though his English is amazing, his like writing is amazing, like everything is good, but because of that trauma of like people questioning if he was good enough, if he was American enough to be speaking this language, I don't think it's ever gotten out of his head, you know? And I think about it a lot. I'm like, how do I empower you? You know, because I didn't have to go through that. I got bullied, but for other reasons, you know? But like, because I was younger, it was easier for me to adapt and grow and get out of that mindset.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I feel for your brother.
Yeah. And that's why I was just like, our experiences are very different because it's like I never had that background of like living in a different country.
How wonderful is it that you know now and that you're able to support your brother in that way?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that's so lovely.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. How do you think these struggles shaped you as a person?
I think the most compassionate, kind, empathetic people in the world who truly make a difference are the people that have gone through pain and heartbreak and suffering and isolation.
Yeah.
Just the struggles and the trials and tribulations of life, because that does kind of dig your well of empathy and you're able to hold space and be there for people who are like that. And also use your own superpowers to quietly but resiliently and surely make your own changes into the world. One of which of mine is through the arts and education. So I think it has greatly shaped who I am as a person.
Yeah.
And I think that I am very empathetic and compassionate, not only to my students, but to the people in my life. Yeah. And I think that's kind of like what I'm known as, like in my friend circle.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm always there for you when you're going through a hard time. And I want to be that person to hold space for you and make you feel like you're not alone in the world.
Yeah.
You know?
And you do a really good job at holding space. So that's why I feel very comfortable with coming to you with my problems.
Yay!
So, and those kids will too. I'm so excited. I feel like talking about this more and more, this opportunity fell on your lap, right? So that you can take these experiences that you had to go through and guide these kids in
it's
a way.
It's full circle.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Everything happens for a reason. And so.
What about you?
Yeah.
How has it shaped you?
I think in a way, it's made me a lot more compassionate and empathetic towards those who are struggling with acculturating or assimilating into the American culture.
Yeah.
Or like just like people who are newly here. I think when I was younger, I wasn't for sure because I was still going through like I was angry all the time. And I think it actually caused a rift between me and my cousin who came when she was in high school. And I remember, like, I didn't understand her way of thinking because it's different. Oh, it's different cultures. And it's just like you're just battling against each other and just your values and their values very different.
Yeah.
But then now looking back, I'm like, oh, well, I should have been a little bit more understanding, you know? But that's where empathy comes in, right? Mm-hmm. Like, now I can treat it with a lot more kindness and sort of, like, bring it into perspective and also to teach people who are coming over here the easier path. You know, because we went through, like, trial and error. Like, what was
tried
the...
tried and true methods.
What are the hardest way for us to, like, get from point A to point B? And we took it, you know?
One thing that comes to mind is I also went through that. There's also internalized racism that we as immigrants go through.
Yeah.
There was a point in my life when I thought I was, you know, white and I was the shit. And I like looked at other fobs, which is kind of not a politically correct term. But I saw other students that, you know, newly came to the country and I would be so judgmental of them.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, they're so fobby. Like, who do they think they are? I didn't realize it in high school, but at the time, that is internalized racism stemmed from your own insecurity because I wanted to distinguish and differentiate myself from them because I wanted to tell myself I'm not that person anymore.
Yeah.
I have assimilated and I am now a part of this community.
Yeah. I'm more American.
Yeah. I'm more American than you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I feel that. And I think about it too. And I was just like, wow, I was a bitch.
But also know that that's natural. That's kind of part of the immigrant experience, right?
Yeah.
And it's completely natural that we would feel that way, especially going through it as teenagers, you know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I read a book. Folks, I highly recommend this book. Not only is she a literary prowess, okay, but Toni Morrison, I don't know, you might have heard of her. She's famous or whatever. Okay. The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, where she really helped me see my own internalized racism that I have against my own kind, my own like Asian people or even like especially Korean people.
Yeah.
You know, because I used to have an adverse reaction to like Korean people. I'd be like, oh my God, you're too Korean. Like, don't come into my life. But that book opened my eyes.
Yeah.
And it's also such a... Oh, such a brilliant story. Oh my God, it rips you apart, but also puts you together and also makes you think. And it's so, it's just so brilliant and thought-provoking. But it's kind of a hard read. But if you're into books, I highly recommend The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison.
The Bluest Eyes.
Yes.
Okay.
Anyway.
We should write all of our recs in the like...
In a link or something.
In a link, yeah. You and all your book recs. We've talked about acculturation, assimilating, but I guess like now bringing it back to our family, how has that impacted like the balancing of the two cultures within your family? I can go first if you want.
Sure.
Yeah, so I guess like in terms of balancing the cultures, it was really hard for my family because my parents didn't speak English at all. They don't understand what's going out what's happening outside mm-hmm. socially. And so the things that I saw happening with my friends' families, I would compare it to my family situation. Mm-hmm. Why weren't they saying, I love you? Why don't they say, good job?
Yeah.
And with that, it caused a really big rift mm. within our family, right?
I really relate to that.
Yeah. It was easier for my brother because he was older. It was really hard for me because I was trying to balance between like making my family happy and living up to their expectations, because my brother was like the gold star firstborn. He hit all of the marks, mm-hmm. you know? And I think at one point I was like, I'm not going to hit it.
Mm-hmm.
I want a life. I want to be able to hang out with my friends and such. And with my parents, I think they didn't fully understand that because they felt that those were just distractions for their American dream.
Mm.
They thought that if I had friends, if I had a social life, if I did anything besides study, then I wouldn't reach the goals that they had set out for me.
Yeah.
Which caused even more of a bigger rift.
Yeah.
And while this was all happening, my sister is watching. Right? My younger sister is watching all this happen.
It's hard being the middle child.
It is. Yeah. It is, right? And during that time, I couldn't be a good older sister to her. And I'll admit that. You know, I think I could have been a better older sister, but I was going through so many of my own struggles as a child. And I think now, reflecting back on it, I think if we had the opportunity to learn how to communicate better
mm.
and to also listen to each other's struggles mm-hmm. as a family, I think things would have turned out differently, but it didn't, you know? And this is what life sort of threw at us, because in a way they needed to learn. My parents needed to learn what was the reality of living in this new country, right? Your child is going to take on the habits of her new environment.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to learn how to navigate that. But even with me, I needed to learn what it meant to communicate with my parents, to sort of like reflect back on like their struggles and what they had to go through.
Yeah.
So now as an adult, our relationship is a lot better.
Good.
Because I've learned how to communicate mm-hmm. and they are still learning how to communicate mm-hmm. because bad habits die hard. And I think with our parents, like, they only know what they know
mm-hmm.
and they have the access to the internet now, but they don't have full access the way that we do, right?
Right.
The way that we use that knowledge to sort of implement it into our life and to make our lives better. So that is sort of like how it's being balanced now. Distance does help a lot. Not living with your parents.
You're thinking it. Yeah, but you said it.
Distance. What's it? Distance makes the heart fonder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like definitely it does a lot for us. And so now I really appreciate my time with my parents.
Mm.
And yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. What a journey too for both you and your parents.
Yeah.
You know, and for you to be able to put words to it and say and communicate and convey, right, your thoughts yeah. about what you went through, I think is a big achievement in and of itself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is sort of my journey. There is something that I did want to touch on, but I guess I'll touch on later.
Sure.
But what about you? How do you balance between balance the two cultures within your family?
Well, I am lucky in the sense that like my parents don't impose any cultural or traditional expectations onto me.
Mm-hmm.
But even if they did, I would say, fuck that.
Dude, props to you for being the older child and like paving that way. Because
I didn't get that.
I paved the way.
But I'm sure your brother did his own.
I know, you know?
Yeah.
I know.
Shout out to your brother. Yeah, I'm very lucky in that way. And I don't really have to, I mean, honestly, I have freed myself from external
mm-hmm.
Egotistical expectations of others. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm still in the process of it, but including my parents. And I am very blessed in the fact that they don't expect things of me. But also, from their eyes, like, I mean, come on, like, I'm educated. I'm now a teacher.
Yeah.
Of not just any subject, but now English. And being an Asian English teacher is a pretty big accomplishment and achievement mm-hmm. in a lot of Asian cultures, especially in Korea, because Korea just puts English on a high pedestal, you know? That's not why I became an English teacher. I became an English teacher because, well, that's another story. I'm going to save myself from that story. But yeah, I really don't feel pressure having to navigate between the American and the Korean world. Yeah, so.
Wow, mm-hmm. That's very nice.
I mean, nice. It took work, you know? Yeah. It took a lot of work, but I'm now at a place where I can say I don't know if it's because I don't give a fuck or because I've detached myself, but I have worked through my triggers and my traumas where even if my parents expect something of me, I'm like, okay, that's their expectation.
Mm. So I guess, like, my question to that is, would you have a Korean wedding?
Would I have a Korean wedding?
If they wanted.
Yeah, if they wanted, I'd be open to it.
Like, as in, like, your parents or your significant other?
You know, I haven't thought that far yet, so I don't really think about that too far ahead into the future.
Okay.
But if they wanted, you know, like a traditional Korean ceremony, I'd be open to having one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So what about, like, Korean mannerisms and such?
Oh, yeah. When I speak Korean, I sound different and I have different energy when I speak Korean, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I speak Korean, it's just, like, it's a little bit more... I'm still, you know, big and colorful and boisterous.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit more subdued and muted when I speak Korean. And I become, you know, because you bow in Korean.
Yeah.
아, 네, 안녕하세요. 아니요, 괜찮아요, 괜찮아. 네, 고맙습니다. 수고하세요. Like, you know, it's a different persona of you you speak Korean than when you speak English. But, wait, what was your question? I forgot. I, like, access my persona way too hard.
My question was, did you have to balance between, like, your Korean, like, the mannerisms and such? Like, not balance, I guess, like, would you, because we were talking about weddings, right? Oh. And then, like, it made me think, like, well, in the future, are you gonna, how are you gonna balance your own household? What are the Korean mannerisms that you would keep versus, like, the American mannerisms that you would...
I don't even think about it like that.
I don't even just like how you act.
It's just literally just me. I am both worlds.
My
decisions are my decisions.
Yeah.
I will pay tribute and I will pay homage.
Okay.
In ways that I can. But also, when I don't, I'm okay with my parents being disappointed with me. Because it's not their life.
Yeah.
It's my life.
Yeah.
I'm okay with disappointment.
I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the immigrant experience.
Yeah.
immigrant experience, because our parents came here for us.
Yeah.
That's ultimately what it is.
But that's also the choice that they
made.
And
so for you to get to the point that you are where, you know, it's okay that they're disappointed. You know, it's your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a really good... I'll eventually get there. like, it's out of sight, out of mind.
But we're one step closer with this episode.
Yes. Yeah. One step closer. Yeah. And then I guess, like, something that I do want to talk about, because this isn't on the agenda, but this sort of is talking about the whole balance. I did struggle a lot as a kid because, as I said, like, wanting to fit in socially versus, like, being at home to these people who are the closest to me and not really fully understanding them, not fully understanding what I wanted and such, right? And so I talk a lot about how I struggled as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess, like, this is a good episode to share, like, why I struggled a lot as a teenager. And it's because my parents' expectations were really high of me as their immigrant daughter and as a person who holds their hopes and dreams, you know? And I think a part of me just never wanted to disappoint them.
Mm.
And as you said, right, like, you don't, at this point in your life, you don't care if they're disappointed or not don't care. Yeah. It's like, it's more of like, if they're disappointed, it's okay.
Yeah, you know? I accept it.
Yeah, you accept it. But with me, I couldn't accept it. Mm. Like, I was always an A-plus child. Like, every single subject I excelled in, you know? Even if English, I got a B-plus, I stayed after school and I read the fuck out of that book and like rewrote like
model every student,
you know. But once I hit middle school and high school, I started realizing there's so much more to education, and that's where it caused the rift between me and my parents.
Yeah.
And I think like particularly in high school, when college was now talked about and my brother is already in college, this guy is double majoring, like he's about to graduate, like all these things, you know. And I started becoming very depressed. I don't think I really realized it until it was around like, I don't think I ever really realized it until it really escalated, because in high school people are starting to wear makeup, people like your image is starting to like matter, all these things, but your parents still don't really want, my parents didn't have the money, like there was just this balance between like I wanted everything that they had, but my parents couldn't give me what they like, they didn't have enough to give to me. You know, I fell into even more depression, and so I found other ways to cope, and one day it just broke. I sort of, my mom couldn't understand what was going on. And I think the hardest part about being an immigrant is, I think, the rift between you and your parents. You know what they want from you, but you can't provide it to them.
Yeah.
But they expect all these things from you. And I think at one point I got a B and my mom was super angry, because she's just wondering like, I'm feeding you, I'm giving you all, like I'm putting you in tutoring, I'm doing all these things, like why can't you get it right? And I remember I was hit a lot as in junior year of high school, because that was the year that I wanted to do more extracurriculars, but my parents didn't understand it.
Yeah, which is very normal.
Yeah.
And it's very common in other cultures. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my brother got into college without extracurriculars, so understanding that just wasn't...
Yeah.
But he was also 9 years older, so things had changed so drastically by then. And so I was like, I was hit a lot, and so I stopped wanting to go home. So I spent a lot of time in... with my swim team or like doing things after school. And then senior year of high school, I think I was so down. I couldn't talk to anyone. I couldn't even talk to my best friend because of the things that were happening at home, because my parents just thought I was a failure. And I think last at prom, someone called me ugly and it broke me down and I stopped going to class. This was my last week of school.
Yeah.
And my dad thought I was on drugs. But it was just like straight up depression.
Yeah.
You know? He pulled me out and he was saying like, you know, like I knew you were on drugs. Without any clarification.
Yeah.
And the reason why I'm telling this story is because this was my struggle as an immigrant daughter. You know, like I want to share the story in the hopes that other people also, you know, like you're not alone in feeling certain ways because your parents don't understand you. I think at one point I just didn't see the point of life, you know, and when my dad was yelling at me, I actually pulled a knife on myself. I tried to kill myself, and I was actually an inch from my heart until my brother pulled me, and then they called 911 on me. I spent 72 hours in a psychiatric ward because they thought I was on something, but I wasn't. I was just going through a lot. And I actually have not talked about this in a really long time. And I think like 72 hours in there, I realized like, well, I don't belong in here. And I'm scared like for those 72 hours. But when I was released, my mom was taken into the psychiatric ward with a psychologist there with me. He spoke Vietnamese and he basically translated between the two of us. And my mom was crying. She was so devastated. And I think in that moment, it shattered me because this entire time, I kept thinking about how much my parents or no one loved me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But I think it's just like the inability for like an immigrant child to speak to their parents because you guys are talking about two different things. Mm-hmm. Like you're not on the same page about anything, you know, because your hormones are going, like you're going through so many changes during that time, but your parents are also going through what they're going through too. I think like after that moment, I told myself I will never get that low again.
Mm.
You know, like and it sounds like very mundane because it's like struggles of a teenager. But I think as teenagers, we don't really know how to vocalize like what we're going through, like bullying, or if like the pressures of school is like really hard on us, you know, and that like sometimes we're feeling alone.
Yeah.
You know, and it's okay to say that you're feeling alone.
Mm-hmm.
I think just like sharing this is like really important to me because it is part of my immigrant experience.
Yeah.
Because this is something that I never want my sister to go through.
Yeah.
But she had to watch all of it happen as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that caused a huge rift in my relationship with her because she felt like she needed to grow up.
Mm.
She felt like she needed to take care of me because I was mentally incapable, emotionally and mentally incapable of handling situations between me and my parents, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
You have moved me, and I'm sure that the people listening also have the same reaction because that was so powerful that you just shared your story with so much sincerity and so much truth to your experience that I think that will really, really speak and touch the souls of those listening. And I think that you're empowering people like yourself by sharing your story.
Yeah.
And you did the best that you could do at that time.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm so happy that you and your parents finally got to a point where it's like, they do love you. It's just such a separation between the two worlds.
Yeah.
It's just like night and day where we're just at the opposite world of each other. I think that being a teenager is hard, but I think that, because think about it, as a normal teenager, you still go through an identity crisis. You're putting on new masks every day. Okay, do I belong with this group or do I belong with this group? Or like, what's my identity? You know, like, how do I make sense of the world? On top of that, as immigrant children, we're going through, we don't have a home because we feel so separated from our parents. And I think that you carried a lot and that was your burden. And I'm so happy now that you vocalized it because now you are empowering your story and you are no longer in shame about what went through. And I think just like how you have empathy for your brother now, I think that your sister will also find it the same.
Yeah.
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 So thank you for sharing that, girl.
Thank you.
That was very moving.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I hope like this story isn't to like, I don't want to glamorize suicide as like a solution to get to where I am.
No.
You know, but if I could turn back and not take that step, I most definitely would.
Right.
Because it's scarring and it's, that memory sits with you.
Yeah.
You know, like it's been many years and it still triggers me.
Right.
In a way. Right. But I feel like, you know, if you're not okay with your parents, I feel like taking the time to find a way to communicate with them is like really important because like there's only so much time we have left with them, you know, and but it's also okay that if the relationship isn't there, like you do it to like your own comfortability, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I also understand that some of us don't have parents out there or like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Yeah.
Woo. What a heartfelt message. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so to like bring it round circle, I sort of want to, for us to reflect back on what we're proud of as Korean Americans mm-hmm. and Vietnamese Americans, sure. and for you to also reflect on your American journey and the positives and goods of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the first question is, what do you feel most proud of about being your native culture?
I like that I have access to two different perspectives. Mm. And I think that makes me more open-minded mm-hmm. Because I've always had to navigate between two worlds. Mm-hmm. Now I try, or at least I try to, and make it a practice to consider everyone's perspectives and everyone's lived experience mm-hmm. because of that. Mm-hmm. I know that doesn't really answer the question, like, what am I proud of about being Korean? Mm-hmm. I really like that Koreans have a huge sense of collectivity. Mm-hmm. We're very collective as a nation. Mm-hmm. When something does go awry, we act as one and we unite. Mm-hmm. Especially like during the pandemic, I think that the way that Korea handled it was very inspirational to me. And it really was awe-inspiring about mm-hmm. the kind deeds that everyone was doing in Korea. Not to discredit everything good that was happening in America.
Yeah, for sure.
But for me, just seeing the difference between the two worlds, right, it just makes me a little bit more expansive mm-hmm. and open-minded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
What about you?
With Vietnamese, our food.
I love Vietnamese food.
Yeah, but I also like Korean
food. Me too.
Food. Yeah, so our food, and also I think there is elegance in our culture. Mm-hmm. The way that my mom spoke about Vietnamese culture when she was growing up in Vietnam, it just made you think of like a warm summer day. Mm. Everyone, like the way she paints it is like, everyone's wearing their ao yai mm-hmm. and it's all white.
Ooh.
Girls are wearing white and guys are wearing like whatever they're wearing.
We don't care about the boys.
And it's just like, it's very dreamy, you know? Mm-hmm. And even like learning my culture growing up, I think there's like certain elegance to it. And so that's what I'm very proud of. Mm. And then what do you feel most proud of about being American?
Oh, good question.
And the reason why I bring this up is because these days it's a little hard to say that we're proud to be an American.
Proud to be an American.
But considering everything that is shown in the media, mm-hmm. but I think it's important to remember that no country is perfect.
Yeah.
And every single one sort of has their own flaws. So while we are living here and reaping its benefits, we should remind ourselves why we have decided to continue living here
yeah.
and why we should be proud.
You know? That's a great question.
Yeah.
I love being American and being in America because of the freedom that comes with it. Mm. And we lose sight of that mm-hmm. because we're just living in it. And yeah. what is right in front of us, we are the most blind to.
Yeah.
But I think I often forget how much freedom I have here to make my own choices and to, you know, make my own options and forge my own path yeah. into this world. And I really do feel proud and very much grateful for that aspect of our country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel the same way.
Yeah.
I think about it a lot because we have freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, you can't find that like in every country out there.
Right.
And I think we take advantage of that because if you were to slander the president, like right now in a different country, mm-hmm. we might not even hear from you again.
You know? So, yep, yep.
So those are like something to like really think about mm-hmm. because we have the freedom to do a lot of things.
Yeah.
And even though like it sucks hearing someone say like really rude things, right? Just like ignore it, mm-hmm. you know, live your truth and mm-hmm. live your life. And I think with being an American, being in America, I think I am able to be truly me because the judgment, even though like sometimes people do judge you, I feel like Americans are unapologetically themselves.
I love it too. Yeah. The individualism. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We talk about community and how we love people coming together and stuff. Yeah. But being able to be you, uniquely you, I don't think you can find that in a lot of countries either.
No.
You know, and I know personally in Vietnam, right, you have to be, like, if you're a woman, you have to act certain ways. You have to cross your legs when you're sitting down. You have to speak in a soft voice. In America, I can say what I want. We started a podcast to say what we want, you know, to do what we want. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the beauty of living in America and to be American.
Yeah, I really agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, to kind of break free of the conventions and be able to declare our unique existence to the world is one of the privileges of being an American. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And so we're going to close out with reading love letters to our parents. Mm-hmm. So do you want me to go first or do you want to go first?
Up to you, baby girl.
You can go first. Okay.
Mine is a little short.
And that's okay.
But I spent a lot of time.
It's going to be poetic either way.
Yeah. This time I made it intentionally poetic and a little figurative and a little abstract. And that's why I just kind of want to like shout out Hua before we close this episode, because I thought you were so brave in sharing your story.
Thank you.
I'm going to be honest. Like, I didn't share my entire story in this episode, which is why I give you even more props. Mm-hmm. For spearheading that vulnerability and that in this episode for us. And, you know, I look up to you for that.
Oh, thank you. But also, it's okay. We have so many more episodes, and I feel like this is just grounds for us to slowly open up.
Yeah.
You know, I think it takes a lot for us to share certain things that are very personal. Mm-hmm. And I think unless we've processed it, right, it can be saved for another day.
So here he goes. Letter to my parents. To my beloved parents. You are the truth of my existence, my threshold, portal, my past, present, and future, and the DNA of my identity. But you are also an iceberg, carrying the great weight below the surface in an attempt to stay afloat. It is my earnest wish that I will one day muster up the courage and the capacity to ask, what are the untold stories that's causing you pain? What did you need to hear as a child? How can I support you to see yourself as the way I see you, resilient, gritty, and as an emblem of strength? You can let down your sword and shield now. You can pass the torch to us. You may think you built sandcastles, but I will help you see that is an illusion, because you have built a castle of rocks that will stand true to the test of time. I will carry on your legacy and proclaim to the night sky that you are a part of me and I a part of you. Thank you.
Oh,
oh my God, the emotions that stirred up in me when I was writing this, I was like, oh my God, I can't.
My heart is beating so fast. Aww. Right now. As always, so poetic, but also, like, I think when you asked the question where it was, can you read that?
What are your untold stories that's causing you pain?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that I relate to, because sometimes they don't talk about it.
No.
You know?
They just mask it.
Mask it.
Because they had to survive for us.
Yeah, they probably suppressed it, you know? And if you ask, it's really hard to pull out stories from your parents unless you know the right questions or if they're willing to.
But also, I think it's important that the children are in the right mindset and the headspace.
For sure.
And I think it takes a certain, it takes a certain attitude and progress in the children having to come to terms with that, to be able to ask your parents, like, instead of just blaming them or you know to be able to say, hey, let's hear about what are your untold stories that you're just keeping to yourself, because now you can pass the torch to me, now I can be here for you, and now I will take the lead and I will hold your burden with you.
That's a lot of work to do too. But thank you for sharing that with us. I really appreciate it, because in a way that also opens up to your vulnerability. you know, in the most poetic way as usual. How am I supposed to follow this?
You can. There's different strengths, you know? There are strengths to being figurative and strengths to being literal.
It's very true. Okay, mine's on my phone. Oh my God, I hope I don't shake.
It's okay if you do.
Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I just talked to you both a couple of days ago through FaceTime, and it won't be another couple of days till we talk again. I guess our relationship has always been like this, or I guess it's actually gotten better. As a child, I never understood the complexity of your world. I only understood your sacrifice at surface level because I didn't fully understand the adversity you faced when you took the risk of moving to an unknown land to make sure my siblings and I had a chance to build the life that we wanted. You did everything to the best of your ability to shield me from what you understood was bad, but my curiosity did not heed your warnings and ran full speed ahead towards everything you wanted to protect me from. But such is life, that we all need to walk our own paths. I know my teenage years broke your hearts a million times over, and a part of you probably blamed yourselves for what I went through and what I experienced going into my college years. How in so many ways your American dreams shattered in front of you as your child grappled with depression and suicide. I wish I can take away all the pain, but I know that that is not what life intended for us. And man, have we gotten out of it stronger and healthier. Now that I am older, working my 9-to-5, paying rent, making sure I'm eating enough, I have only gotten a glimpse into what it means to be an adult. I think a lot about what you had to go through to make ends meet, working two jobs and often overtime, and how in a lot of ways I have learned so much from your resiliency, dedication, and bravery. Though it has been treacherous, your sacrifice and love is more than appreciated by your children. I love you, Mom and Dad.
Yeah. Good job. That was so heartfelt.
Yeah.
I think something that came to my mind was when you said, you know, you risked everything to come to this country. Mm-hmm. And I think as children, we forget, like, shit, they must have been scared too.
Yeah.
You know, because they're human and they don't know how to exist in this country. Yeah. And I think that goes to show our, like, emotional maturity that...
Oh, for sure.
We can now think about, well, yeah, that's what our parents would have been going through at that time. Because they were probably scared shitless, not knowing, like, the... what's going to hold for them in the future. And I think that that is one of the highest acts of love, to be able to say, you trust me because I will always take care of you, even though everything in the future is uncertain.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you for helping me see that.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can tell a lot about your progress through that letter.
Yeah. It's been a journey. But... I'm glad to be sharing this journey with you.
Likewise.
Tears in our eyes.
I know.
But so I hope everyone enjoyed that those letters and also enjoyed this episode. Mm-hmm. We hope that you take the time to sort of reflect on your immigrant experience, or if it isn't an immigrant experience, right? Like, that it sort of opens your eyes to those who are, who have gone through this or who might be going through this.
Absolutely. Yeah. I also encourage you guys to do your own introspection and head and heart work. And, you know, writing a letter, even though if you may never send it, it is a part of processing about what you went through. So perhaps you might also exercise in writing a love letter to your parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's all, folks.
That's all. This one, wow, we definitely meditated on our death.
For sure.
You know, and we came back full circle for sure.
Yeah.
You know, about our lineage, about where we come from, but also like where we are right now and also where we're going towards the future.
Yeah, and it's a very complex part of our identity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad that we got to share it today.
Me too.
Yeah. Yay.
All right, folks. Till next time.
Meditating on death.